I would be spinning on my head on cardboard when my dad would be coming. This is in the 80s. You were just an idea. And my dad would be like, "This is not why we came to America."
Welcome to Burning in Hell.
What is up, guys? This is Hannah Berner, and we're in hell, but we're in a special hell today. We are in therapy hell with the angry therapist, John Kim. Welcome. How are you, John? How are you feeling? What's going on?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm feeling very great today. I'm feeling like the frozen cursor on your computer screen when it just I was supposed to work out. I didn't go. Didn't do much content. I'm just sitting around the house eating a lot of chips.
I respect that. I feel like I've been great for a while, and I just started to force myself to like work out a little and to like make a little more content. But I appreciate your honesty. And just to open this up, I want to know, what are you angry about?
So I used to be angry in my 20s, my 30s. It came from being unhappy. You know, I was I grew up in LA, and I was a screenwriter before I became a therapist. And I was married. The marriage was falling apart. I was just chasing shiny things. I put pause on my life until I got, you know, at that time, my definition of happy was like a three-picture deal.
Yep.
The you know, Porsche Range Rover combo and the horseshoe-shaped driveway, the house in the hills, all that stuff. And because that never happened, I was just angry, and I didn't live. I just kind of existed. So spent a lot of my time in coffee shops, just punching keys and thinking of act breaks, waiting for something, you know, amazing to happen. And the amazing thing that did happen, it wasn't amazing at the time. It didn't feel like it was amazing, but was my divorce. And that sent me into therapy school, doing my own work, writing self-help books, you know, all the stuff I'm doing today.
Wow, we've only been 2 minutes in, and you've already been so fucking open and hit on so many important things already. So I'm very excited.
I've also told you my life story in 2 minutes, so thank you for having me. It was wonderful.
Yeah, we hope to see you next time. I actually have your books pulled up. It's I Used to Be a Miserable Fuck, An Every Man's Guide to a Meaningful Life, and Single on Purpose, Find Yourself First. It sounds like you fucked up a lot.
Yeah, I think I did.
In the general terms of like, you've experienced, like, you're practicing what you're preaching, if you know what I mean.
In the Tumblr days, I started a blog called The Angry Therapist. I just thought it was funny that a therapist was angry, and I didn't think anyone would read it. It was my own journal, and it was very therapeutic for me because I didn't have much of a life. And so I remember just blogging and being creative, and that's what started it all, was that whole blog.
It's funny you mentioned being Korean, because my first ever job was hostess at a Korean restaurant in Brooklyn. I was like, I fucked with bibimbaps, like I was eating, a nice Korean barbecue, and there were a lot of nice like Korean families in our neighborhood, but they definitely were like very hardworking and incredible cuisine, not to mess stereotype, but the food was fucking good.
Korean barbecue, and also very emotional, right?
Passionate, like, I would say.
Passionate,
similar
up and
to
down.
Italians.
Yeah, exactly. Very vocal, very coming in hot, that kind of stuff.
I want to know, what did your parents want for you? Like, did they have high standards for you or expectations for you?
They came to America because the education's free here. And I think, you know, they just threw books at me. They wanted me to, you know, get straight A's. It's that whole quintessential Asian American thing. I got into breakdancing. And I remember I would be spinning on my head on cardboard when my dad would be coming. This is in the 80s. You were just an idea. And my dad would be like, "This is not why we came to America." And
you can do this in Korea. They have cardboard.
Well, it wasn't cool. Yeah, there was no such thing as, BTS and all of that stuff back in the day. Right. But yeah, and I remember that I paint that story because I've always been the black sheep. I've always been, you know, I'm not the Asian kid that went to AP classes and, you know, became a lawyer or any of that. I was kind of the fuck up. The C student, went to Cal State Northridge, studied film, you know, all
creative,
of that stuff.
So. It sounds.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I write self-help books and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I definitely love creativity. Mm-hmm. I definitely am more right-brained than left.
Mm-hmm. I also want to know, how much do you yourself deal with depression or anxiety or, you know, mental health battles?
Sure. I think part of me being grayed out today is I wouldn't say it's like, it's not depression where I can't get off the couch, but yeah, a depressed mood, mm-hmm. Anxiety all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't have panic attacks, but I have anxiety constantly. You know, I'm an Aries. I'm very impatient. I'm always running around. You know, I need to breathe. I forget to breathe. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think depression, anxiety, especially with the pandemic and everything that's happened this year, so many people are struggling with those two things.
Yeah.
Being depressed, right? Not seeing what's going to happen, the uncertainty, the shaking of the life edge of sketch. Like, what does work look like? What does, especially if you're single during this time, you're like, how do I date? How do I do that? Mm-hmm. And then the anxiety that comes from all of that, you know?
I feel like you hit on relationship stuff. I was looking at your TikTok and the ones that were going viral were like definitely relationship questions that you were hitting hard. Like, people will literally ask you, like, what's the most important part of a relationship? Should relationships be easy? Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting coming from your perspective of someone who's like, did the whole marriage thing, mm-hmm. does the whole dating thing. Mm-hmm. And you explained that you're an anxious attachment style.
Yeah.
Can you explain what that means?
There's many, but I'll just to clarify, there's two main ones. It's anxious attachment or avoidant, right? And so then the secure is kind of where we all want to be secure attached. Attachment styles come from upbringing, you know, our early days of attaching to mom, dad, parents, and then from there outward into society. But
so you could blame your parents, is what you're saying.
Yes, okay. Yeah, that's basically what I'm saying. Is always blame, send them the voicemail, blame your parents. My anxious attachment style looks like, if you don't call me, text me, tell me I'm sexy, I think something's wrong. I think, you know, the relationship's over. I'm holding onto your leg instead of holding your hand, you know, that kind of thing. Now, I've come a long way. I'm 48, so I'm definitely not as anxious. But yeah, that's what I've struggled with in the past relationships. The codependency, the enmeshment, the losing yourself in someone else. And I used to think that that was romantic. Like, I used to think, being a hopeless romantic, you know, if we're going to do this, we're going to go down together or go up together. And I didn't know that you're supposed to give someone your hand and not your life. Right. And
wow.
I think the way that we've been programmed with society and Disney movies and The One and all that, it's like when you find your one. And I think you're engaged, aren't you?
Yes, I just got engaged.
Yeah.
I met a guy. Thank you. I met a guy during the pandemic. We got engaged.
Wow.
So I'm actually fascinated by this stuff right now because I'm apparently, I'm going to get married in a year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making some big ass decisions.
Yeah.
But I want to break this shit down because you just made some really important points. I have like 5 minutes, no, I'd say 10 minutes of my stand-up comedy shitting on Disney movies, just how they trained you to be attracted to like the worst douchebag guys, like the narcissistic right. prince is like the guy you're supposed to get, when it's like, no, be with the nice, funny, cute one who cares about you.
Right, right. Well, and also that guy's supposed to save you, you know?
I mean, the layers
right.
of fucked upness.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But what you said is so right. There aren't necessarily like books of like how to fall in love or when you know it's right. It's all based mm-hmm. on gut feelings, which my gut feelings and my anxiety feelings can be very hard to differentiate.
Yeah, distorted.
Yes. And then you have your parents' stories, you have your friends' stories. Most of life is your girlfriend being like, what do you think he thinks about me? And you're like, right. I don't know, it doesn't sound great.
Right.
But you had a lot of fascinating videos talking about like, what should relationships be? And you were talking mm-hmm. about how people think relationships should be easy. And you kind of have a different perspective on that.
Yeah, they're not, and you know this. They're not easy, and I don't know what attachment style you are, but when we get into relationships, you're not only, I mean, after the honeymoon, right? Because the first 2 weeks to a month is easy, meaning there's a lot of dopamine when you're discovering each other's stories and bodies. It's all exciting, and you know,
it's a literal drug.
Yeah, you're high. And that's exciting and fun, of course. But when that settles and you start seeing the dirty socks on the floors and all of, you know, whatever, a whole well-rounded person, I think that's when it gets hard, because two people, they're not just bringing themselves, they're bringing their stories, they're bringing their dysfunction, their trauma, and so that's when shit comes up, you know, and then you have to work through all that. And we never learn, like in high school, you know, with geometry, fucking long division, we learn things we never use. And then we get into relationships and we're just like, oh, yeah, this feels amazing. But that feeling may be dysfunction. It may not be healthy.
Especially if you're comfortable with dysfunction from your upbringing, maybe.
Yeah, if that's the norm, absolutely. And that's what I find many people mistake, that lightning in the bottle for chemistry or whatever. Mm. And it's actually dysfunction. It's what smells familiar. It's what you're used to.
That pattern, then, just repeating.
Yeah. And then you get into a relationship, you're like, oh, I can't do this. And then you find someone else, and then you go with that quote unquote lightning again. And the only thing that changes are faces, but it's the same shit, same, you know, same pattern. So breaking patterns is a huge, huge thing to start to evolve and grow and, you know, have a new experience.
I'm like, okay, now I need help. In my relationships, well, I grew up very sports oriented, where my dad was always like, don't let men distract you. So I guess that was building already, like kind of an avoidant thing of like, men will mess with your head, or men will confuse you, or men will hurt you. You have to focus, because God forbid you lose your tennis match because of a guy. My dad will kill me, which, you know, we can unpack another time.
But how old were you when you were getting those messages and you were playing tennis
young,
and your dad was like,
young,
like
11,
what, 12? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at that age, I mean, you're just powdered snow. And if that's, you know what I'm saying? If that's your first imprint, of course, that's going to make you at least cautious or avoidant, or, you know, the underneath the subconscious, your dad saying men are distractions, you know, whatever it is, whatever message you got. Yeah.
Yeah. So then I did this thing in relationships where I'd hear I had a lot of guy friends, and they're always like, oh, girls are so annoying. Girls are crazy. Girls are so annoying. So in my head, I'm like, I'm not going to be that annoying, crazy girl. So in relationships, I would put on this like coolest, easiest, easiest going, great performance for like 6 months. And I would rarely fight with any of my boyfriends, because I would just kind of deal with whatever their shit was going on, and then eventually I'd get sick of it, and for one day wake up and be like, I'm done with this, and they'd be like, why? And I'd be like, I never addressed it, I never talked about I guess I knew when things would be wrong, but I would never fight for it. I'd never even give them the chance to see what I'm really like. It was more like, I mean, and maybe it's a different way of finding out they're not right for you, but I never would even get into it with people. Like, I was too scared to even get into it, the confrontation.
Yeah, and you just said something, scared. It's scary to show ourselves. It's scary to actually be vulnerable and, you know, like show. It's easier to get naked. Like, that's physically. It's scary to show someone who we truly are, what we're going through, what scares us, what's difficult for us. You know, all of that stuff. So, yeah. So
and
basically,
I'm a sarcastic bitch. So it's very easy for me to just use humor to like,
to
just be like, we're flirting. Who knows?
Right.
Who knows? And you put on this mask.
Right.
And I most.
So that means that in your relationships, you did a lot of doing life around the person, not with. So I talk about doing life with instead of at or around. And so if you're hiding and you're masking with humor and you're being avoidant, that's doing life around someone. So they never really got to see Hannah, like truly who you are.
No, and then it's funny because I'd be attracted to guys who I knew they were very unavailable, because I knew that it would never. Mm-hmm. And then towards the end of that was when I met my fiance, which he's funny because he's 45 and I'm 30. And you say like you with someone you meet, you have all their history with it too. Yep. So it's like, I wonder if I'd met this guy when he was younger in life, if his history would have meshed with my history. Like, I feel like I met him at this time in his life where he finally was ready to like be open. And it was him that was like, you're the kind of person I want to be with, that made me feel like, wait, can I get out of my cave?
Like, well, he may be the catalyst that pulls you finally out of, you know, puts the walls down, like your drawbridge on your castle comes down, because he's able to do that because you trust him or the relationship.
Were no games. But I was talking to my friend earlier today how we need to fucking normalize the post like dopamine puppy dog love stage, because I feel like so many people get to it and you have less sex or you get into some fights and you're like, oh, it's over, it's done,
right?
It's
horrible. right. Also, you know, swipe culture has created a lot of impatient instant gratification. Mm-hmm. And so it's we have that thing now that we've become baseball cards. It's like, oh, there's a little discomfort. Well, I've got eight other people that are DMing me. I've got choices. And it's like, okay, you do, but those people aren't perfect either, and you're going to have to do the work. So like every relationship is built, every relationship is hard. And if you can't swallow that, you're just going to be exhausted.
Well, you guys need to follow, you need to follow The Angry Therapist on Instagram, on TikTok, because I did a deep dive and it's all in my notes, but you were talking about the most important part of a relationship, which is obviously a very general clickbaity type thing. But the first thing you started talking about was the end of you, like how they make you feel. Mm-hmm. And it makes so much sense in terms of like, how the fuck are you going to make a relationship work when you don't even like you?
Yeah. Are you talking about your relationship with yourself?
Yeah. And it sounds like something you've discovered in terms of, it didn't sound like you were comfortable with yourself in your 20s.
I didn't know myself. I was just programmed by Los Angeles and
which is dangerous,
right? And I was just chasing the shine, you know. I thought, okay, if I get the hot girl and the house on the hills and the cars and the deals, oh, then that's happy. I'm gonna swim there as fast as I can. Mm-hmm. I had no sense of self. So after my divorce, I went through a long stretch, like 4 or 5 years of being single on purpose, and it was lonely. And it was, you know, I went through all the feelings and all that. But I went in, like, I bought a motorcycle, that one behind, that's six now. And I started doing things for me, getting some tattoos. Mm-hmm. I started blogging. Mm-hmm. I started, you know, start building a relationship with myself. You know, so I spent a lot of time by myself, sitting at diners and coffee shops and just getting comfortable with me. I have clients who can't even go to the movies by themselves. And I'm like, why? And they're like, well, it's just weird. I was like, well, what are you bringing to the table if you're bringing someone who is dependent on someone else? You know, you gotta
bring, like, people can feel that energy. I feel like they can feel when you're not comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah. You gotta bring a life to the table. So you have to bring your own life, friends, passions, hobbies. Yes. So you have two people that are coming together, instead of your whole life hangs on this one person. They're the sun you revolve around. Okay, great. That sounds romantic. It feels romantic. But that's very lopsided in the relationship, you know, and then you're going to be scared if anything goes wrong or all the, you know, and so then you're not really being your authentic self. You're exchanging, you know, your truth for this other thing. And so,
Sorry, I'm using you for my own experiences, but I just have to say the universe is fucked up, because I've always been very career driven and career focused. Mm-hmm. I went from sports to now like entertainment. And my fiance is like you, where he's done a lot of work, where like he loves sitting alone at coffee shops. The little things bring him joy. He's had like money, fame moments. He doesn't care about that anymore. But I had like met him at the height of like my entertainment career that I'd been working on, where like I was buzzing, I was hot, I was feeling myself. And then a couple months into our relationship, I had some horrible career shit happen. Mm-hmm. Like lost some gigs, like it, like my reputation was getting like bad things happening, and I felt empty. And I remember him being like, yeah, because you can't have your happiness just surrounding your career. And I'm like, but it made me so happy.
Right.
And I had to literally tell myself, he doesn't just love you because you're on TV.
Ooh, yeah.
Or he doesn't just, even though my whole life, people always gave me more attention when I'd win.
Sure.
Or love me more. Like, so we're raised on that. But I had to literally figure out, like, A, this dude is going to love me even if I lose all my jobs. And B, am I going to still love myself when I, if my career has its lows?
Yeah. And listen, I'm sorry you went through that. I know entertainment is feast or famine and all that, but you know, it's a great die marker to see if this person's real, if this person will be around, if this person's with you because you're famous or because of you, you know? So yeah, that must've been tough. But also if you were playing sports at an early age and the pressures of winning and losing at 10, you're wired a certain way. So, you know, fuck Hollywood but I had and entertainment.
I had to face like my biggest fear, which is like not, like I thought he definitely liked me partially because I was successful. And I was really proud of it, and I wore it like a badge. And then the universe was like, let's level up. Let's see.
Let's take that away from you and see what happens.
Exactly, exactly. Right. Now, you mentioned you're an Aries. Are you into astrology? Are you spiritual? Are you, like, where, give me the sauce. What's going on?
I believe I have my birth chart on my arm. I believe in the stars. And you know, as I turn the corner and swim toward 50, spirituality is very important to me. It's something I'm exploring. But I don't have a religion. I'm open. You know, I'm open. But I do believe in things greater than ourselves, of course.
And you also were talking about your early 20s and mistakes you made, and we have a lot of listeners in their 20s. So do you have any kind of insight off the top of your head of shit you want people to know about their 20s?
Yeah, number one, and this is not only 20s, I think this is the difference between I was a child, so from a child to crossing that great divide to being a man, I was a walking reaction. So instead of reacting, if you have the ability to respond, that one thing changes everything. So in my 20s, I was angry, I was throwing chairs, everything was a reaction, knee jerk. The ability, because I think it takes practice, to actually put a speed bump there and take a minute and to look inward. Where is this coming from? Think about what you're going to say, you know, all of that. And then it ripples into relationships. You know, in my early relationships, I would just steamroll. I would be argumentative. I'd be very defensive. And it flips the magnet, you know, and they're like, you can't, this, it's not soil. And I think your 20s, they're all about exploring, but if you can start to practice responding instead of reacting, I think it's a huge game changer.
That's awesome. And also, I always joke that in relationships, it's not about not fighting. It's about like being good at fighting with the person, like having good fighting chemistry. So how know if the relationship is like, because you say relationships shouldn't necessarily be easy, but how do you know if it's too hard? Like, how do you know the difference?
Yeah, you just said something really good. It's not about how many times you fight, it's about how you fight.
Yeah. Right?
So you should be able to choke out your partner. No, I'm kidding. You know what, Hana, let me let you do the comedy because that's not my thing.
No, that's good. I liked it.
Most people fight in a way that's not healthy. We have people that are not creating a safe space. You're not empathetic. A lot of finger pointing, a lot of that kind of stuff. You can fight every day as long as you're fighting fair.
You're like, have fun with it.
Yeah, get naked. You could fight in a way where there's rules, right? Where you're trying to, one of the things that I really love is this one sentence is try to understand before trying to be understood. So if two people are trying to understand before trying to be understood, they're going to be less reactive. They're going to be pulling more from their heart than defense. They're going to take ownership. And so that kind of fighting actually produces relationship glue. That kind of fighting gets people closer together after the fight. But if you're fighting in a destructive way where you're assassinating character or you're saying, you know, whatever, I don't know, I'm with you, you're this, you're that, eventually it's not going to be sustainable. Eventually someone's going to tap out, you know?
Yeah. I think in past relationships, I've known that some of the people I would not I didn't think they'd be good at fighting, as in, like, I feel like they'd, I've seen them snap at other people, so I would just avoid it. I would just be like, I can't fight with this person, because the second I do, I wouldn't, I'd have to leave. But I like wanted to make it work, so I would just like bend over backwards and be, and let them like do whatever. And it's like, you can't be afraid of fighting, because then you can't then, get healthy boundaries, I feel like.
Yeah, and also you're probably, every time you do that, you're going to start collecting, you know, your resentment coins. Ooh. You know, you're going to be angry inside. And then that piggy bank is just not going to be able to hold the coins anymore. Then just, then you're just like, I'm done. And the person's like, what are you talking about? And you're like, well, I've been done. It's just been accumulating. You know, it's like death by a thousand paper cuts.
It weighed on you. And also, my brother actually got married this past weekend. And I was actually listening to the vows for maybe the first time. And there was something about like, they were just emphasizing like, there's going to be lows. Like when you get in relationships, it's not necessarily that even the relationship has a low, but like personally, you are going to go through lows, and like finding a way to be there for your partner in the highs and lows that is natural with life, which can be difficult if it's not like a healthy base of the relationship, I feel like.
Yeah. And I think also society paints marriage as, you know, once you're married, you've reached the island. It's all downhill, and it's a good thing, and it's not. I mean, it's the I always say the picket fence has splinters. You know, it's hard. It's marriage is hard. Like I think marriage is harder than when you're dating, because when you're dating, there's less at stake. You know, there isn't this big promise. Marriage will force you to look at yourself for sure.
And dating, you you can leave. There isn't that heavy pressure. I also feel like, is there anything else about relationships that you think people don't know about enough and that society has like glamorized that just isn't true?
Oh, besides the fact that they're hard?
Yeah.
there's a lot of things that I disagree with, like the one, you know? I think we were kind of programmed to like find the one, and it's like purpose, where we don't just have one purpose. I think we have many, you know, and the one is the one that is in front of you. That's the one. So in your case, your fiance is the one, you know. If you start thinking about the one or the one that got away, like that kind of stuff, it pulls you out of the present. It, you know, now you're in your head and you're in the past, and you're also a lot of like what ifs, you know. And so the one and the one that got away, all of that stuff, I think it can be a cop-out to not doing the work.
Do you believe taking a break in a relationship works?
Yes, but only if it's not like, okay, let's put this on pause, I'm gonna go fuck other people, but it's, okay, let's have a goal. So let's put this on pause. What are you gonna do? What am I gonna do? When are we coming back? Like, there has to be rules, right?
Yes.
Can I text you? Can we, you know? I think a pause can definitely be helpful. Most people, they take pauses and they just like go and try to hook up with other people. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously the probably the worst thing you can do.
Yeah. And then the resentments will just continue to go.
Yeah. And there's more problems, you know?
Yeah. I have like so many relationship questions, which are so funny. But I also want to understand.
It's okay, because you're going to get an invoice after this, which is what my goal is.
I'll Venmo you 100%. I do. I was thinking about growing up in LA, and I grew up in New York, and everything's about, you know, grinding and succeeding and all that stuff. How did you finally get out? Like, where was the transition of you being like, I don't need that stuff, versus also you like building your own brand now and find, and in a culture that's about likes and follows, like now that you're building a brand, staying kind of, I don't know, even keel and not caring too much about all that stuff.
When you say all that stuff, you're talking about like the external?
Yeah, because now that like you actually have this hot brand and you're posting videos, how do you not find yourself in that same position of like, okay, well, I need to make the most money, and then I need to get the most followers and the most views and all that stuff?
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't know if my brand is hot, but
I like it.
Thank you. I struggle with it. It's still a thing, you know. I still want more. And it, like, I remember thinking to myself when I started this, and social media was like a thing. I was like, oh, if I could just get like 30,000 followers. That would be amazing, mm-hmm. you know? And then when you get there, you're like, okay, now I want 200. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to 200, you're like, okay, I want that 1 million. It's just the way that humans are, you know? We rarely, and I think this is why practicing gratitude is so important, but we rarely compare ourselves with people who have less. We're always comparing ourselves to people who have more, who are prettier, who are, you know, whatever, more successful. And so I fall into that trap all the time, you know? Once I started getting book deals, then I wanted like other media stuff. Now, then I want TV stuff. And then once I, you know, so it's like, it's something I currently still struggle with. It doesn't help that I live in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. you know, but it's always kind of there, but I definitely am stronger at smelling the flowers and being present and really being grateful for what I have instead of chasing something that is, you know, a mirage.
Now I really like all that stuff. There are a lot of people out here, especially on TikTok, teaching about wellness and teaching mm-hmm. about like morning routines and like kind of glamorizing the wellness process. Is there anything mm-hmm. that you would like to clear up about the wellness process or about healing that you think has like, I don't know, is misunderstood right now, especially yes. for like millennial women?
Yeah, I think because wellness has become commercialized, which is actually a good thing. Like, you know, there's less stigma with seeing a therapist. Mm-hmm. You know, you get judged less and all that. But I think people think wellness means reading some self-help books or, you know, quote unquote, doing the work means, you know, taking some video courses. The work requires an inner journey, usually with a therapist. You know, you can't process by yourself. So I think that the biggest misconception about self-love or self-betterment is that, you know, you could just listen to a podcast mm-hmm. or, I mean, these things are helpful.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I send out texts. I do everything I can to help people. But the actual inner journey and to process and to all that shit's hard. And that takes therapy. That takes couples counseling. That takes, you know, hard conversations. It's not because people are just throwing around fancy memes that are cute and that actually, you know, that are okay. It's a great reminder.
Yeah.
But like, that's not doing the work.
It's not like a one size fits all. Like if you eat the right food and you get the right crystal, everyone will have the same level of happiness. It's so much more complex than that. Okay. You're doing amazing, John.
I'm going to, whenever you want me to insert this, I want to read something to you. That's just like 60 seconds that I wrote a while ago, because you were talking about love and marriage and,
let's
you want to insert
it right
that
now?
Oh shit. All right. Well,
no pressure.
It was going to be my thing in my back pocket that I later, but okay, let's do it right now. All right. Let's front load this.
Cause we're going to finish with a game, but I want to hear this message.
Okay. So we'll do this and then we'll do the game. Okay. Dear love, this, by the way, if I get married again, this is probably what I'll read when you're exchanging vows. Yeah. All right. Dear love, we will both understand that there will be days when we can't stand each other. There will be days when you will want to punch me in the face and I will want to take the long way home. We will disagree on things like movies and books and politics and what to buy at the grocery store. I will forget things, misplace things. You will run late. Our friends will have opinions of us. We will fight, maybe a lot. You will shut down. I will wonder. But at the end of the day, we will both come back to each other and your head will always fall back on my chest. And no matter how many times we fight, we will always fight fair. That will be a non-negotiable and we will be together knowing that we are choosing to be together, not because of logic or loneliness or a ticking clock, not because we look good on paper, take cute photos or think we'll make cute babies. Not because we've already committed to this, not because we don't want to be alone, but because we believe in us and make a choice every day to be in this and love each other the best way we know how. Our relationship will not be built on fear, as many are, but instead courage and transparency. And like any relationship, ours will also be hard. And like any relationship, there is no guarantee. We will not compare this to what was. Any residue we have from our past relationships we will work on individually. It is our own responsibility and what being in something healthy looks like. We will sharpen each other and I will make you feel beautiful and you will make me feel invincible and vice versa. The only thing we can promise is to be honest and love as hard as we can. We both know there is risk. We both know we can get hurt. We are willing to put that on the line to experience the higher notes of something meaningful. We will take responsibility for our own shit, but also leave room for magic and settle for nothing less.
Wow. Wow. I mean, that was therapy in itself. But and everyone should take notes at the wedding if that is what happens. But that like took you on like a whole full journey of just like a lot of little notes of like importance. And I love that you also went right into the negative. Like, yeah, like we're going to fight. We're going to.
Because it's true. And I think that we don't look at that. And I think it's, you know, nothing can be built without truth. And that is truth. You are going to fight. And there's going to be disconnection. There's going to be drift and all of that, you know. So starting there is where you where I think people meet instead of pretending that something is going to be, you know, fluffy clouds and happily ever after.
Yeah, and I do think there's an importance of like you being comfortable with yourself and you knowing what you're bringing to the table and knowing what you're signing up for. Yeah, it's not a fairy tale. Knowing that it's a journey of imperfection, which is part of everything.
You know what's funny is when I first got married, so I was 29, I read something like this and it was so different because that was all about like, oh, you're the one. And it was very like lovey-dovey and all of
that. When I look into your eyes, there's everything else disappears.
It was all that. I was crying and, you know, and you know what? It was what it was for that point in my life. And now this is my truth. You could see the character arc. You could see like I've gone somewhere and come back, you know.
You even mentioned like what people may say about us. And like those are all things that people don't even think about in a relationship that can affect you in so many different ways.
Well, thank you for letting me read that.
I fucking love that.
Yeah, let's do the game.
Hell yeah. And a perfect segue. Now that we're just feeling in touch with our feelings, it's time to play the seven deadly sins.
Seven deadly sins.
What are you greedy about?
Oh God, greedy about my time. I'm actually an introvert, so I'm really greedy. I'm the guy at the party that will slip out the back, or I'll invite people over, and then I'll be in the bedroom reading a book. You know what I'm talking about? I'll slip out and I'll be doing something and be like, what are you doing? This is your party. It's like,
you're like, my social battery is up. Sorry, bro.
Yeah, exactly. I have a very short social battery life, I guess.
I'm actually very similar, but I thought it was me being like lazy or like a bad friend. Mm-hmm. And then I realized like, oh no, this is how my battery works.
Unless it's one-on-one. When it's one-on-one, it's long.
Yeah, I'm terrible in groups. And one
groups.
I'll be the one in a party where I find like one other person who I can laugh with and I'll just stick with them like as long as I can.
right.
Who are you envious of?
Oh man, I'm envious of anyone who hits success with very little effort. And this shit happens in Los Angeles all the time, you know. And you know, of course, there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that don't quote unquote make it. But people that just like come here 2 weeks, 3 weeks in, they're already like whatever their vision of success looks like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes me feel, because I always felt like the kid that got held back.
Yeah,
you know, late bloomer. I sold my first book when I was like 40 something. I did my first squat at 35. And so people like 21 already have like whatever it is, record deals, or they're built their empire. I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's crazy.
I once heard a quote that it's like life is like popcorn. Even though it's the same temperature, we're going to pop at different times. And as someone, especially like with sports and entertainment, sometimes when people pop too early, like then it's like anything after that, they don't feel like is good enough. And like there's always like pros and cons to the like popping, if that makes sense.
I'm the corn kernel that like falls out of the machine and is in the corner. And then like,
I mean, still they always say people who become famous later in life are so much better because they have like such a better perspective on shit, or people who become rich later in life. So I'm trying to make you feel better.
Yes, I agree with that. I in my 20s, again, because I was a walking reaction and angry, I was not prepared for any success. It would have destroyed me. I would have been the you know, the douchebag in the Ferrari, yeah, with the big ego and arrogant. Yeah,
and just the universe was like, not for you right now.
Yeah, let's wait till you're 70, and then maybe
we'll give Ferrari. You a Ferrari. Right. What are you gluttonous about? So, like, what do you overindulge in?
Oh man, this is gonna sound weird because I'm sure most people say food. Mm-hmm. I have addiction in my blood, and I think one of my addictions is my daily sweat, working out. I could go to the gym and work out for 2-3 hours and waste my complete day. So yeah, it would be movement, some kind of like, I got into CrossFit for a long time, so something that has a hero's journey. So any kind of workout where you're just like suffering, I'm addicted to.
Wow. I mean, I guess it's one of the healthier things to be addicted to, but it's funny how you could get addicted to anything if you really focus on it enough. But you said you did squats later in life. Did you not work out in the beginning of your life?
I was one of those guys that just went in to do like biceps and you know, like the
you
like
skipped leg so day every day.
There was no leg day, so I looked like a pigeon. Like, I had these tiny skinny legs. And then when I was 35, I found functional fitness, and it's all about like leg squatting. And it's like, oh my God, what is this? I just did arm curls and like bench pressing.
So you're doing the douche workout.
Yeah, the douche workout.
This is a perfect one for you. When was the last time you experienced extreme wrath or anger? So even though you've done a lot of work on yourself, what's been the most recent time that you got pissed the fuck off?
Oh, it's road rage stuff. So I was driving LA. Isn't it so weird that when you're in your car, you become a different person? Yeah. I don't know if it's because you feel safe, because there's things that you would never do outside of the car, but because you're in your car, you're like,
yeah, you have this protection.
Like, you would probably, yeah, I mean, not you, but just in general, people would shoot people.
Yeah.
But like, if you were at the supermarket, you would never. No. You know, but like in the car, you're like, oh, fuck it. Now I hope you die. I'm going to chase you home.
When like 10 minutes earlier, you could have done the same thing to someone else and like thought nothing of it. Like, you cut someone else. So you turned in front of them.
I was on my phone. And so I was driving a little slow, and this giant lifted truck with two American flags screamed past me and was yelling obscenities. And then it pulled over wanting me to go there. I think he wanted to fight. And then there was that crossroads where it's like, do I go and become that angry Korean guy? And, or do I, look, I'm 48, I've got a child. Do I just, you know, take the higher road? And, I took the higher road, but I was furious. Like, I wanted to take a bat to this person, like that kind of rage.
Yeah.
That was the last time. Yeah.
But you chose the right path, no pun intended.
Well, that's because I can't fight. You know, I get my ass
kicked. You're like, I could squat, but I can't actually hit anyone.
I could talk about feelings all day.
You could have decided what his demons were and unpacked them for him. When was the last time you were a sloth? So like just a lazy piece of shit, said, I'm not doing anything today. I'm not looking at emails.
No. Yeah, today.
That's awesome.
Today. Today, I did nothing today. I had one meeting with representation, and then I'm having this podcast with you. Did a couple videos, but other than that, yeah, I
How
feel very
How often do you let yourself have like days to just chill?
One a week. I'm usually very productive. I'm up at 5 a.m., but I think one time, I had this thing called Fuck It Friday when I was working in nonprofit. We were always just like so down and overworked, underpaid. I said, you know what, on Friday, let's do one thing and just say, fuck it. So whether that's a donut or leaving home early, whatever it is, one thing for you that you wouldn't normally do, but you're going to do, right? And so I think one day a week, we should have that Fuck It Friday. It doesn't have to be on Friday, but it's like, you know what, fuck it. And today I could say it's a wash, but you know what? I'm just going to file it under self-care, and I needed to do nothing today.
Hell yeah. That's what I tell my fiance. I'm going, I'm having a mental health day today. And he's like, you're watching Netflix. I'm like, mental health day.
he's like, you had one yesterday and the day before as well.
I know. I'm like, don't tell me when I'm good. I know what I need.
I need a mental health month.
He's so funny because we're like kind of a different generation. So I'll be like, I'm having a mental health day. And he goes, it's called the weekend. And I'm like, it's a mental health day. When was the last time you let your pride or your ego get in the way of something? Like, how's your ego?
Yeah, it's big. All Aries have big egos, as you know. We're fire signs. Today, I actually got into it with my girlfriend, and we got into it. I think I was defensive. I think I let some ego get in the way. So yeah, today a lot of stuff happening today. Shit.
Yeah, today is it's as long as it's fresh in your mind to tell some good anecdotes. Yeah. when was the last time you lusted over someone? So besides your girlfriend, do you have like a celebrity crush or like a type?
I don't have a type, but I love, this sounds obvious, but I love smart women. I love funny women. I love, celebrity crushes. I don't know. We were talking the other day, my girlfriend and I were talking about Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh yeah, she's great.
Yeah, I think, you know, and then there's the classic Natalie Portman. Everyone has a crush on her.
Yeah, she went to like Harvard or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Has your type changed since your 20s?
Yes, I think what I'm attracted to and who's attracted to me has changed.
Ooh.
And it usually does as you grow and evolve, right? So I used to attract the wounded. My dad's was an alcoholic. I have addiction in my blood, so I would fall under the category of what they would call a bad boy, but someone who's reactive, unpredictable, high strung, and all that. So I was the predator, and I was attracted to prey.
Mm.
And the prey was attracted to me. So someone who had something taken away from her growing up, maybe her voice. Maybe, where she's not able to express herself or doesn't like herself.
Where she's willing to take any of the negativity from you because she feels like she deserves it. And you're ready to express anger.
Yeah.
Because of your own past traumas.
Yeah, that kind of trauma bond,
yes.
As we call it, that was very potent. And so today, as I start to work more on myself, now I attract women who are not prey, women who actually can draw boundaries, say no, call me out on my shit and all of that.
Yeah, there's something so attractive about a partner who calls you out on your shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes completely not about your ego. It becomes like, oh, wow, they care about me so much that they are telling me the truth about a situation.
Well, what makes it attractive is they care about themselves so much.
Mm.
That they, that's what makes it attractive. Not in an arrogant way, but in a, hey,
it's like if you want to be in my space and in my life, this is.
Here's what I need.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my
yeah.
God. Okay. Final question. And you probably have a bazillion answers for this, but for all the listeners, I like to always wrap it up by saying, what is your secret? Like, what do you do to cope with your hell when you're going through it? Whether it's relationship hell, whether it's career hell, just when you're going through a tough time. How do you cope?
Oh man, I'm gonna say, you know what my goal is in life is to not have a lot of false moments. So whatever your hell is, as long as you're honest with yourself, that's all you can do. Lying to yourself is what makes hell forever, because then you carry that. So as long as you have honest moments in your life, because that's gonna equal self-esteem, it's gonna equal you being the best that you can be, with whatever you can control. That's it. That changes the hell, because then it's no longer hell. You're honest. What else can you do but be honest,
And what else can you do but be yourself and be human? And also understanding, like stop lying to, like people don't normally want to lie, but it's like really listening to the voices in your head of what is your truth, what is your voice versus what other people want.
That's what I mean by honest. Putting action behind your honesty, not just, when I say honest, people think, oh, well, I don't really lie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you exchange your truth for membership? Are you a false version of yourself? Do you live outside in instead of inside out? Like those kind of things.
What do you mean exchange your truth for membership?
In my 20s in Hollywood, I would be anything you wanted me to be a part of something. So whether that's a club, or be a part of a relationship, like, romantically, or to be part of a friendship. So if you no longer do that, then you're now building self-worth. If you're always exchanging your truth for membership, you're living a powerless life. And this is why in Hollywood, everyone does it. And that's why everyone's driven by fear.
Wow. Oh, yeah. And you said that in your speech you gave earlier about we will not be driven by fear.
Oh, you listened. Thank you.
Yeah. No, yeah. Well, actually, because I was going to ask you about it and then I forgot it and you just reminded me. Because I feel like a lot of people make decisions based on fear.
Yeah. And I didn't say we're not allowed to be afraid because everyone has fear. Mm-hmm. We're just not going to build love based on that.
Wow. What is a fear that you might base your love around? Like as in like that they might leave you or like that you're scared of being alone?
I have a fear that it will end. Yeah, I have a fear. I have this pattern of relationships lasting about 3 years, mm-hmm. you know, that whole 3-year itch thing. I want to swim past that. Mm-hmm. I want to give myself a new experience, you know. And so usually our patterns that happen, if we look at our relationships, they're going to continue unless we take a black light to them. And so I have a fear that, one of us will check out before we should.
Yeah.
Or prematurely, you know.
Holy shit. You are so vulnerable. You're so cool. You're so insightful. I feel like there's so many therapists out there that like fit kind of the mold, but I think you're doing a great job at showing people that a therapist is not just kind of like a kind robot that asks you why you feel a type of way. And hopefully a lot of men out there too see you and want to be as vulnerable and open about their feelings. Where can my listeners find you, listen to you, read your books, join kind of your world?
Just at the Angry Therapist across the board, mm-hmm. The Angry Therapist. And yeah, thank you for having me on my podcast and all the kind words.
Thank you so much, John.
Yeah.
You're killing it. And thanks, guys, for coming to hell today. We learned a lot of shit, and we didn't really get that angry, which was very nice. So we'll talk to you later in hell. Bye, guys.